Welcome to Passion to Power with your host, Michelle Zeitlin. She's a creative producer who quote-unquote wears many hats. She's also a talent and literary manager and founded the company More Zap Productions and Management. She develops people and projects across all media. Her guests encompass the gamut, from artists to authors, actors to activists. Please welcome Michelle Zeitlin, Passion to Power.
Arielle Moyal is a sports agent. I call her a Jenny Maguire. You've heard of Jerry Maguire? Well, she reps top baseball and basketball players. She is their advocate, and she's going to outline her story. She also outlines her early life as a competitive chess player, pre-med student, and all-around success story. So stay tuned. Here is Arielle Moyal.
Arielle Moyal. You see that I've always worked with athletes and I'm good at working with athletes. So from day one, I've been advocating for athletes. That's what my role is. And so here it's in marketing, PR, and digital. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, it's always an advocacy position. And so I've continued to do that. There's been a lot of narratives with clients of mine, especially in the last year or so, in regards to social justice items, et cetera. And regardless of whether it's my experience or my feeling, my job's to advocate for them. And I still have continued to do that. I think for Rep One as a whole, we did have a little bit of an eye-opening in the sense where I believe that we've always been really conscientious of our athlete needs, but having people have downtime, especially in baseball, when the issues regarding like George Floyd and May and the May Black Lives Matter items and all those stuff also coincided with the pause of the baseball season. The lanes that our clients decided to put their time and stock into were a lot of those initiatives. So Rep One had to support those, and we had to figure out ways to do that as a company as well.
Well, gosh, I'm really glad it was a positive year for you, because it wasn't for a lot of people. And, yeah. Doing what we love to do and actually being able to make money at it is a privilege. And you do look very, very young for those people that can't see Arielle and are listening to my podcast. She's wearing a red hat, and it's a product hat. And I believe it's
a
White Sox, Sox player. Yes. Tell us about your red hat.
So when you do equipment deals for players, there's four categories. And Aloy is considered a player edition player, which means he gets special customized items by his shoe company, which is Adidas. So
very nice. Important. It's really a VIP hat.
VIP hat, yeah. My husband has a jacket, and every time he wears it, people go, "Oh my God, where do I get that?" And I feel bad because you can't buy it. So
that makes it even more of a privilege, right? That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah. And you know, you always want to work with good partners like that. Adidas is very good to us, and they've done stuff not only with Aloy, but other players. One of our clients was the 2020 Rookie of the Year for baseball. And we did a whole bunch of logo shirts and a bunch of stuff for the start of season this year. He was really happy about it. So good partners matter. So kudos to Adidas for this wonderful hat that I'm wearing.
So let me ask you something, because I've worked with big brands. In fact, I used to be a big fan of Adidas when they had the bright red suede shoe. I liked it because as a dancer choreographer, it was still cool and athletic, but I could point my foot and spin in it.
But
I've worked with Nike several times. I would love to know more about your role in marketing. Are you reaching out to brands to develop these relationships on behalf of your clients?
Yeah, I play a particularly interesting role. At a lot of agencies, trading cards, memorabilia, and equipment are so lucrative and detailed that there's usually a separate category. I do have a director of collectibles and equipment. However, I am still at doing those deals as well, especially for the top 10% of our players. But I'm also the person who's the main revenue generator for all the other marketing initiatives, PR, digital, community, et cetera. I do have staff within my team on both sports, as I do over, I do VP baseball and basketball, that work in those lanes, but the direction, oversight, and a lot of the major revenue generation does fall on me for all categories that are off field.
That could scare some people, but it doesn't scare you, does it?
I like a challenge. Would it surprise you that I'm a type A Aries fire sign?
Not at all.
Yeah.
Not after reading your bio, because I'm really excited that you're like Miss Queen's Gambit. You were like a chess champion, right?
I was, and I haven't watched the show yet. I don't know what.
Oh, it's brilliant.
No, I haven't. I have to. It's on my list. I developed a quite a long list of recommendations in quarantine from friends of what to watch. It's on there, but every time somebody talks to me about Queen's Gambit and sees I play chess, that question comes up. So
yeah, or Bobby Fischer. So tell me about playing chess when you were so young.
You know, so my grandfather was an immigrant from Russia and he played chess. And my mother made us play piano and chess when we were kids. And I didn't always appreciate that until I got older. But chess was really fun for me. It's interesting. I actually did a little kind of breakdown of this for a women's group I was at, because I told people I still had my competitive chess clock and my competitive chess board, and I have all of the stuff from when I was a kid. And someone goes, "What does that look like?" So I grabbed it from my shelves and I showed them what the pieces look like and why they're spelt on the bottom and all this stuff. But I played sports my entire life. I was very good at sports. I was a huge soccer player. But just like you think about going to practice for sports, I went to practice for chess. I used to go to my instructor's house twice a week. We used to, you know, she used to have like a king and a pawn and a king and a board. And I used to have to figure out how to stalemate or how do you win a game when you only have a knight? So there's all these things that you have to do and it's practice and you have to do strategy. And then we used to travel, me and my sister, we used to travel the state of California and kind of on the Western region. And we used to play chess competitively. And
wow.
I tell people it really prepared me for this industry because I'm really good at problem solving. I'm always organized. I'm tactical. And I'm oftentimes the only girl in the room. And so I learned how to be that person a very long time ago. And I wasn't scared of being that person.
Yeah. Now that you're 21. No, I'm kidding. So I want to know a little bit more about your road to this agency. And I know you played sports, you competed, you're very comfortable as an athlete. And obviously you just outlined all of those fabulous tactical and strategical skills you have, but how did you wind up in this position?
It's a very bizarre path. This is probably one of my favorite questions to answer because I think it's an inspiration point for anybody who wants to restart that they can. I'm born and raised in Los Angeles. I always wanted to be a UCLA Bruin. I just always did. And I wound up getting into UCLA and I went to UCLA. And I was pre-med. I actually started as a chemistry major. And my intention was to either become a dermatologist or a ER surgeon.
Wow.
So I was pre-med. I actually double majored in political science as well. But I come from a single parent household. You know, there was a lot of times in my life growing up where we went without, even though my mother did the best she could do to give us the most normal life possible. And not working was not an option for me. I had to work. So I figured I wish I was good enough to make UCLA's D1 soccer team. I definitely was not, but soccer was still a big part of my life. And I did play club while I was there and did some other stuff. But I figured if I worked for the UCLA athletic department, it'd be easy for me. I was an athlete, so I knew what the recruiting processes went and all that stuff. So, okay, I can get a job full-time in the athletic department. I'll like it.
And work at the John Wooden Center. I mean, like the most magnificent space, right?
You know, looking back on it now and realizing the clout that 9 years at
the
UCLA.
The halls of greatness.
I know. And so my first job was I got hired for a program they called Blue and Gold. And it essentially was a group of students that were the faces of campus when you were a student athlete. Yeah. So when I was there, we had to do all of the compliance stuff. We had to check your grades. We did your official visit tours, all that stuff. And I really liked it. I thrived really well with it. And ironically, I'm in baseball now. Actually, the best player I ever recruited to UCLA was Trevor Bauer. So I did his official visit and everything. I don't know if he'd remember me at all, but I worked in that department for 4 years. I actually never tailgated a game while I was a student for football because I worked every single one with recruits. I'd sit with their families. I'd do all that stuff. And I, you know, did my pre-med. I graduated pre-med, graduated with my poli-sci degree. Wow. And what I got recommended for a job full time for the UCLA men's basketball team. And I thought to myself, awesome. I need to study for the MCAT for 2 years. So when they're traveling, I can sit and I don't have to, I have this desk where I can study.
You're a real underachiever there, Ariel.
Real underachiever. Yeah. I know. So what eventually happened, because I'll give you the short version, was, you know, I took the MCAT, but I wasn't super into going to med school anymore. I really realized I loved working in sports and I loved working with athletes. I think I'm very good at it. And I kind of had a heart to heart with myself where I said, look, I hope if I get surgery one day, the surgeon wants to really, 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 really be there. And if they don't, maybe you need to reconsider moving forward with that. Not only for life happiness, but also practicality. I'm not willing to spend $600,000 on education if I'm not going to use it, right? So I made a commitment to myself to try to see where the sports career could take me, but I also made sure that I returned to school because I think education is important. Right. So I did get my full-time master's degree in sports management while I was working at UCLA, wound up working for the UCLA Bruins men's basketball team for 5 years. And then I was poached away by the Sacramento Kings, and the Sacramento Kings hired me to do player development for them. And 2 years after that, I left to come back to LA to work for Bill Duffy, and he's one of the better, well-known basketball agents. And that was actually the first time I got true marketing work. I did some player education at the Kings, but where I was negotiating dollars, that's where I learned that. And so I did a hybrid role of marketing, PR, and client servicing. And then I wound up leaving BDA to come to head the division for Rep One. When we decided to start a basketball agency this year, that came about at Rep One in April. And then that's when I was promoted to vice president of both baseball and basketball. So, I mean, it's an interesting journey because I didn't intend to end up here, but it sort of fell in my lap. And I do like to bring that up, that anybody really has value and you just have to prove that value and worth. And anybody has the opportunity to work in this career path if they really try very hard.
You know, I do coaching and I'm always reading the next best book, whether it's Grit or Outliers, et cetera. And there's a very famous book that's now a 2.0 by Tom Rath called Play to Your Strengths.
Oh, I'm gonna write that down.
Yeah, okay. And you have definitely played to your strengths, because often, especially even in athletics, you know, you'll see that little guy and he can make that great hook shot, but you're like, he's 5'8". He probably doesn't have longevity in that sport of basketball, right? But he can do it. But play to your strengths, because more often than not, that's going to be what's going to make you succeed in your division, right?
And, you know, I also need to commend my mom here. I did get looked at by smaller schools, D2s and other things for soccer. But, you know, on a personal level, I don't have a great relationship with my father. I don't think he's a very good person. And so I watched my mother really struggle with making sure she could take care of us when my other parent decided not to. And what that kind of, and I'm, by the way, I'm the oldest sibling too. So I've got that.
How many are there?
So I've got one full sister and I've got two half siblings from my dad's second marriage. So I'm the oldest of four siblings virtually. And we know how that goes. We play parent sometimes a lot too.
I'm the eldest.
Woo-woo. So with my mom, I refuse to allow that for myself. And it's not a knock against her, because she taught me so many of my strength points. It's this thing of sometimes you have to take the practical choice because it's the most sensible option. And maybe that's not what everybody can do, because maybe they do have generational wealth and maybe they do have other things that they can lean on. And I didn't have that choice. And so I did get looked at for smaller schools for soccer, but I knew I was not going to make soccer my profession. So when UCLA came around and I did wind up getting a full ride to UCLA, I couldn't turn that down. So I chose to forego playing soccer on a higher level so I could get a better education. And especially when I was at that time thinking I would be a doctor, UCLA is one of the best medical systems. So that's the choice I made. I would never regret that choice. I'm very appreciative of where my life has gone, but it was a lot of what ifs or things that I didn't know about, but it's okay because I still kind of made the right foundational choices for myself that translated to like what I discussed earlier. I have 9 years of UCLA athletics on my resume. That's a big deal for me. And that was only afforded to me because I chose going to that school. So.
So much of your work is probably very hands-on with your athletes, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's now more. That was actually probably, I think, one of my biggest personal struggles, because I'm the happiest when I'm facing clients. And when I couldn't see anybody for a year, COVID, it really hit me hard. There's actually a lot of my players where we would have like weekly calls to just chat on video chat. And like one of them was learning merengue, and he would just prop the phone up and show me the dance moves while that he was learning, so we could have a little bit of interaction. But it was hard not to be in person with them. My day-to-day, I luckily do work from home actually already. With our office being in Irvine, it is almost an hour and a half without traffic for me. But a lot of my baseball players are not in the office during season at all, so it's easy for me to do that. Now with basketball, I have been there more. Although, again, remember, I have staff that can supplement that FaceTime as well, and it's important for them to get that interaction too. But you know, my days are always different. Sometimes I'm with players. Sometimes it's just emails all day. You know, I'm also in charge of hiring and corporate initiatives. Sometimes it's talking about the overall strategy for Rep One. Sometimes, like this week, we have an open role open in baseball, so I'm interviewing about 15 people this week. So there's a number of items that I do, and every time of the year is different also. So baseball, famously, you've got winter meetings at the start of November. So I'll be negotiating all of those equipment deals then. So my time will be a focus maybe really on equipment in the fall, where it's probably more focused to PA partnerships and team deals during season. For NBA, we're hitting off season right now. I've got a couple players left in playoffs, but not very many. So camps, any charity initiatives they do in the summer, training. We've got our draft pick in the office who's been there for a while, who's doing his training and workouts and everything at our facility. And we're preparing him for the draft in July. So it's kind of a lot of things all at once, but ultimately it's like what I told you at the beginning, my job is player advocacy and working for players. And that is what I do on a daily basis. And that is absolutely my focus.
And are most of your clients male?
All of them are. Yes. So our agency only represents NFL players, MLB players, and NBA players.
Got it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that changing at all in terms of moving women into these roles?
You know, Rep One started about 17 years ago in football only, and they opened baseball 6 years ago and basketball this year. So I'm saying that because I think that there is growth, and I do believe that they are the people who are in charge of those decisions going to continue to grow in those areas. Women sports, I'm not sure. I would love to see that. But I also know that my boss is very, very open to and heavily keen on having women agents in our agency. I mean, we've looked at options for basketball and baseball. There's no qualm about having women in those roles. So I'm also excited for that momentum. You know, if I can't get female athletes right away, maybe I can get some really badass women who are agents that can come and join us instead and kind of maybe pull and start getting women that way. But I don't know how to answer that entirely, because I don't think it's off the table. It just hasn't been a discussion at this point.
So is your husband also in the sports field?
Oh, we would never work if he was. He is absolutely. There's no way. He's got the normal job. So my husband has a very interesting job. Don't get me wrong. He does insurance fraud on workers' compensation cases for one of the biggest carriers in California. So he gets cases brought to him. He determines whether they're fraudulent. He builds the case. And then he communicates with the district attorney and law enforcement to either pursue or not pursue those items. So it's a very important role. But because of the confidentiality of it, because you are dealing with state departments, he works 7:30 to 3:30 and he cannot take work home. He has no email on his phone. There's no one will call him after hours, nothing, because it has to be within that time frame on a confidential computer. So he luckily has the normal job, because there's definitely times where we'll be grocery store shopping and I'll get an emergency call and I have to go, I'm going to go home. Here's the rest of the shopping list. I have to go. And he's just like there, like, okay, finishes grocery store shopping.
Is he kind? Does he make you a margarita? So by the time you get home?
Yeah, he's a wonderful, wonderful husband. Matt's great. He takes care of me. Like I told you, he's the person that will come kindly tell me, you know, work will be there tomorrow type things. And he's also very supportive of my role. I'm sure I'll go a little personal, because I think other women who are trying to get this career might appreciate this. And the men who are listening probably need to hear this too. There are a number of reasons why getting to where I'm at has always been harder than the men that have come before me. But one of those other big ones is there tends to be a lot more single women my age in these roles, and there's a reason for that. It's not very easy to explain to somebody that I am surrounded by professional athletes on a daily basis. It's also not very easy for someone to understand the insane schedules that you might have to have. And also, I think that there has been, obviously, within our generation, because I am a millennial, a break of the understanding of traditional roles for women in households. But that's also another hurdle that we have to climb over. So there have been plenty of times that I have tried to build relationships and either jealousy or time or other things become a factor. And I always believe that if somebody really is into you or wants to be with you, they're going to figure it out and make that time. And when I met Matt, it was 2 weeks after one of my seasons at the Sacramento Kings had ended. And I told him, I think on our third or fourth date, that he was meeting me at the best possible time because I had 3 months of off season. But I told him I fully expected him to run for the hills once August came. I was like, you're not going to be able to handle this, and you're going to like take off running, and it's going to be too much for you. But Matt made it work, and Matt made me feel important. And he would do things like go walk my dog when I had to work at 11 o'clock at night. And sometimes he'd be there asleep in my bed, and I'd come home and just literally crawl into bed, and he'd be passed out, right? And but still, for him, that was time that he got to see me and he got to wake up with me. So, you know, I remember a conversation a scout for the Milwaukee Bucks came to give to my grad school. And she was talking about how the biggest concern for her in her career was actually how her personal life with finding essentially a husband and having children were going to fit, because she was in her mid-30s and was still single. And that was one of the conversations that I appreciate the most because of how vulnerable she was. And it also resonated with me because at that point, I'd been struggling also myself to find somebody who kind of would take and understand the career I was in. So there's another thing that I don't think is talked about enough, and people need to understand that. I think men need to be kinder to women who are trying to also be badasses and pursue these kinds of careers, to understanding that honesty, trust, and all those things have to be there, and you have to let us also thrive, and the jealousy needs to be taken away from those moments.
All right, so as we wrap up, I have two pods of listeners that have really grown over the course of this interesting 18 months. Okay. One pod is the 18 to 26 aspirants. I call them the people on their yellow brick road to success. 18 to 26 is what the analytics are showing me. And then the pivoters in my pod, 42 to 59. And those people are making some seismic shifts because the world has changed so much. Sports, mm-hmm. entertainment, right? The gamut, production. Could you speak in a couple sentences to each of these pods in terms of advice or what you've learned and taken away?
Yeah. I oversee our interns, so most of them are kind of in that 18 to 26, and I give them a lot of life advice. I think that's important. And I'll give you something that has come up a lot often with the fact that the world's coming back to normal after COVID. Normal was in quotations, by the way, but normal after COVID. A lot of that's around job applying. I could give a million pieces of advice, but I think this is the most pertinent right now. I would like to just remind anyone that's 18 to 26 that applying for jobs is a failure game, because at the end of the day, the place that you're applying can take one person and you can only take one job. And if you do the math on that and logically look at it, those despondent feelings that you have might dissipate, because you can't take every job. You have to be rejected, and they can't take every person that applies. And if you really look at it logically like that and understand it, then you might get a better perspective that you just were not the right fit for that particular role. And a reminder, you need to be yourself when you're applying for these jobs, because if you're not yourself, there's two options after that if you get hired. You either live that lie the entire time you're at that job and then you're miserable, or your true self comes out and they don't like you, and then they're miserable and you're also miserable. So you want to just be yourself, answer the questions that they ask you in interviews as honestly as possible, and understand that you always will not get picked, but somebody will eventually find out that you are the fit for them, and you like them as your fit. And as long as you can have that confidence in yourself to really digest that job applying is a failure game, you're going to, I think, be much more positive when you're going through this process, and probably more patient. For anybody that's in that other demographic you discussed, I think my biggest piece of advice for them would be that there is value in listening to younger people, And for you to maybe thrive in your roles as somebody who oversees staff and or who is looking for staff, you don't always have the answer. And sometimes, and I tell my staff that it is a mediocrity. I do not expect any of you to be afraid to come tell me that you counter what I'm saying. And if I think that you have a better perspective, I'm going to tell you to run with it. And the reason being is, why would I helicopter parent all of my staff? You hire for the places in which you don't maybe have all the expertise and in which you want your company to grow and your role to grow. So I hire for the lanes where I'm not always the expert in those lanes. And I have to trust that that person's going to do their job. And even with me, when I'm interacting with people that are heads of certain brands now, and I think that they look at me, because as you mentioned, I definitely look younger than my mid-30s. I kind of get pushback where people think I don't know what I'm talking about because they think I'm too young. And then my perspective sort of wins them over, but it's why struggle in the beginning. Just be more open to those perspectives and understand that there is value in listening to young people who, especially in a digital age, have grown up with things like computers and social media, and we might know better than you. So I listen to my staff, but I do have conversations with people that in their 50s and 60s where I wish that they did think that they knew better and would listen to me a little bit more. I think that's my best advice for those who would like to keep being prosperous, who are older in their careers.
Hear, hear. Being older in my career, I agree. I hired an assistant 5 months ago, and I literally went after her and found her through social media because she was blogging about a casting director that I needed to know about. I went into her portfolio, started looking at everything she does. You know, she was a graduate at USC. She was a playwright and a writer, and she's been working with me now for 5 months. And I need that millennial lens, you know?
Yeah. I had a graphic content intern. And up until we hired him full-time at the start of May, myself and another of my marketing reps were handling social media. But I told my boss, like, I can't also be the full-time social person. It's a lot of work.
Yes.
And when I brought Cade on, of course, I give him oversight and direction, but I also said, I mean, it's also, I'm going to give myself props here. He's 22, just graduated yesterday. And I've told him he basically has carte blanche to do whatever he wants. And this is what I need. And what I'm looking for here are the rules and parameters, but run with it. He's by far done a better job than I could have done on that. And I'm glad that I let him have that leeway because he's felt the confidence in himself to really take on the challenges I've given him. And we talk every day, but I told him the vision I wanted for like our stagnant graphic content, but I didn't really know how to create that vision. And he did it on the money and I just on the money. And I'm glad, like it was all of his creative leeway and it was his choices, but it was exactly what I told him I wanted. And so moving, and then I get compliments on our social all the time now. And I say, not me, that is Cade Bucknam too. That's him the whole way through. And I think that's what I'm kind of getting at for older people that monitor staff. Empower that 22-year-old who's straight out of college. Empower that person who's creative and knows how to storytell and graphic design. Give them the way, like give them the option to thrive because you're going to have a better staff, but you're also probably going to win. You probably will win.
So if someone wants to get in front of you and they're interested in working in sports agency, how can they? How can they reach out?
I do have my personal email on LinkedIn, and I have with this role made my social media private. So I do usually get cold reach outs on LinkedIn messages on that personal email or through social media. My Instagram and Twitter is just at @AJMLikeMaryOYAL. And I do my best. I have a soft spot for students, especially female students, to do any informational interview that comes my way. But caveat, be patient with me because when I'm busy, I might push you off for a few months, but at least I'll get to it at some point.
Well, I can speak to that, but you've been busy, but it's been great to have you, Arielle. And you're a powerhouse.
Thank you.
A powerhouse. And I am thrilled to have you on my show. And when I'm feeling comfortable, I'll come sit with you and have some popcorn and a hot dog and watch the Dodgers game. How's that?
Yes, that sounds great. Let's wait for it to die down a little bit and go later in season.
Yeah, I'm going to take my time.
Yep.
Arielle, you're awesome. And signing off. Have a great day.
Thanks so much, Michelle. Have a great day.
Bye.